Hey everyone, it's Ryan here with Cardinal Aviation. Welcome to episode number 38 of the audio briefings. Thank you very much for being here. Thanks for joining me. I'm really happy to have you. This episode we're going to call the debriefing, and I'm going to get into why once we get into that. But before we get going, I just wanted to let you all know that this episode has been brought to you by Valerie and Alan, and both of these guys are awesome. They went to the podcast page and clicked on the support the podcast or buy me a coffee button and either bought a coffee or became an annual supporter, if you will, to help us keep pumping out this content, to help improve the way you all fly, to help enhance safety and just how we operate the airplane, and also to allow me to continue my journey in learning so that I can continue to bring you this content. I was going back almost to the beginning, and the first couple episodes, I kind of introduced myself, and I haven't done that in a really long time. So the quick Coles Notes version, I've been in aviation for about 20 years, just over now. Started pretty young, worked my way up in the industry when times were really tough, just post 9/11, and flew up in the Arctic, flew overseas, wheels, skis, floats, turboprop commuters, turboprop air ambulance, jet air ambulance, a corporate jet for several years, and that was 11 years of professional flying. And then I went over to the dark side and became a radar approach controller and air traffic controller. So I've kind of got both sides of the mic covered there. I may not have the 10,000 hours, closer to half of that, but when it comes to the quality versus quantity discussion, I feel like my time in the airplane has been quality and varied, and I've had the really good fortune of having some amazing experiences flying with some amazing pilots. And from each one, we take some lessons and we learn, and from our experiences, we fill up that bucket. And I feel it's my job to help pass on some of those lessons that I've learned in the field on both sides to you all. The other part of that is having flown kind of off airport and all that up north, I also do fly a tail dragger and do quite a bit of STOL off airport flying now. I'm current on tailwheel, off airport flying, IFR flying, and if you've listened to some past episodes, currently working on the helicopter conversion, more than anything, just in my journey to continue my learning, to continue improving. And if you want to hear about the reason why I went down this little helicopter rabbit hole, go back to the episode called I Plan to Fail and I Succeeded, and you can hear all about it there. But yeah, working on the helicopter conversion, just picking away at it once every week or two, which I know is not the most efficient way to do it. Doing that with BC Helicopters in Abbotsford with Sam, and Sam, Misha, Sancho, Ty, the whole team there has been fantastic. So little plug for BC Helicopters. And yeah, the other thing I wanted to mention before we get going is flightcrew.ca. So if you are an unemployed pilot, if you've been impacted by COVID, if you're getting ready to look for your first job, go to flightcrew.ca, submit your resume. We are building a pool of resumes, and then we will be working with some operators, hopefully, to help place pilots and just provide a service to the pilots, but also provide a service to the operators so they don't need to get flooded with hundreds and hundreds of resumes, as we talked about in the last episode. So flightcrew.ca, check it out. Go to cardinalaviation.ca/podcast. Check that out for show notes and also to support the podcast if you want to join Valerie and Alan, or last week's episode brought to you by Vignesh and Jahan. Go check that stuff out. The other thing before we get into the debrief was something that I had the honor and privilege of being part of today, speaking of Vignesh. Vignesh runs, I want to almost call it a sister company, something similar stuff to what Cardinal does, in Alberta, Canada, and he arranged Canada's very first Transport Canada approved online rust remover, and that was today. And I mean, it was a long day in front of a computer. It went from 9 a.m. until about 3 p.m., And he had a series of, I believe it was six presenters, everything from Transport Canada to the Transportation Safety Board, an aviation medical examiner, a weather briefer from NAV Canada, myself, a flight instructor. We all presented on various topics. There was about 40 attendees and there was a quiz after each speaker. And this was actually approved to meet the two-year recency requirements for Transport Canada. It was really, really well organized. And he sent a little gift to all the presenters and it actually arrived in the mail yesterday. And I got this really cool clock for my office. I'm looking at it right now. It's like a Cessna altimeter. So the time right now is 9:15 p.m. Thanks, Vignesh. And congratulations on organizing a fantastic rust remover. So that is everything I wanted to talk about before we talk about what I really wanted to talk about, which is the debrief. And if you have ever flown with me in a coaching capacity, you know that I don't cut corners and I take it really seriously. So seriously, in fact, that if we go do an hour and a half in the airplane, usually later that night or the next day, you end up with a debriefing document that is usually anywhere from 2 to 4 pages written out long form where we break down everything we did, everything that went well, and also just some background pointers, tips, references for you to study to make your flying better, more efficient, just all around to move in the right direction. Whether or not we fly again in the future, I think it's really important to have that stuff in writing just for your own reference to go back on. So what I wanted to do today is I'm not going to read one, but I have my notes from my knee board from a flight that I did with a client about 3 weeks ago now, and it's been a busy couple weeks, and I've just got like 2 words per line that I wrote on my knee board. And what I'm going to do is, without mentioning who it was or what kind of airplane we were in, I want to almost give a verbal debriefing on the things that I pick up on. And you're gonna hear this and you're gonna say, well, wow, this guy sounds like he needs a lot of work. Here's the thing. When we're working with general aviation pilots, particularly in the IFR realm, a lot of these things are very common. And the reason why I wanted to actually record it as a podcast is because I find myself repeating it over and over and over, at least once with almost everybody I fly with. And this is all part of taking general aviation pilots and giving them some of the skills and tools that professional or career pilots, whatever you want to call them, use to make their flying as safe as it is. So here we're going to go. I'm going to be fairly quick on each point, as quick as I can be. And we'll go through kind of the debriefing points for this flight. So the first note I have here, it says ATIS before clearance. So in the case of this flight, we were doing an IFR flight, which includes going out and doing a hold and an approach and a missed approach and another approach. And we started up the airplane and we got the IFR clearance. And then after we recorded the IFR clearance, went and got the ATIS. So this is a really small point. Definitely get the ATIS before you go pick up the IFR clearance, because there may be some piece of information, the active runway, altimeter, stuff like that, that we can get kind of pre-programmed and just have the mental picture of before we pick up that IFR clearance. And it's also going to help us anticipate what might be in that clearance based on active runways, weather, etc. Okay, the next thing I wrote down was 1 minute until taxi. And what that was we picked up the IFR clearance and they had said, okay, advise ready to, or they gave the taxi clearance and the client said, well, we'll be ready to taxi in 1 minute. And they said, okay, advise ready to taxi. When in fact, I mean, it's really easy to say, yeah, we just need 1 minute. We actually were there for about 9 or 10 minutes, still setting everything up, programming, all this stuff, getting everything ready for our flight so that we were ahead of the airplane before the wheel started rolling. But this is kind of part of a bigger picture type thing where, as a pilot, don't key the mic and tell the controller what you think they want to hear. Oh yeah, we're just going to be 1 minute. In aviation, the difference between 1 minute and 3 minutes is huge, especially the difference between 1 minute and, let's say, 9 or 10 minutes. That's massive. So rather than saying we will be ready in 1 minute, because based on that 1 minute comment, the controller is going to start making their plan. Okay, what's the taxi plan? Oh, I'm not going to send that airplane via this route because the airplane that's parked over there is going to be ready in 1 minute. Or maybe he starts already calling the departure controller and getting an authorization or a release for departure based on the fact that this airplane is going to be ready to depart in 1 minute. So if you're not going to be 1 minute, if you're not sure, just say, yeah, we just need a few more minutes, or we'll call you when ready to taxi. Don't arbitrarily throw in a time on it like 1 minute. The next thing was the missed disconnect. So we went out and the departure was really, really, really well flown. And the hold was really, really, really well flown. And then we came in for the first approach. And so far, this client has absolutely nailed everything on this flight. I'm really happy. I'm really pleased with the progress. All the actions in the cockpit have been methodical. Every button pushed has been intentional. Everything's going really well. I mean, there's a few cleanup items, but we get on the approach, we get down to minimums, and he's under the hood. And okay, we reach minimums, missed approach. And I saw the hand kind of start reaching for the autopilot. And I kind of smacked the hand. I said, disconnect it and fly it. So that's where I wanted to go with that. If you are going to fly a missed approach at any point, a missed approach is never, ever, ever, ever flown on the autopilot. In the missed approach, your first action, and this may change by airplane, but it really, I'm guessing, shouldn't or wouldn't, whether you're in a 172 or an Airbus 320, is going to be disconnect the autopilot, add power, positive rate, gear up, flaps up, and start flying the missed approach. Once you are on a trajectory that is stabilized and away from the ground, you know, maybe you're hand flying the first turn of the missed. I don't know. Once you are moving away from the earth and the airplane is stabilized both in the lateral and vertical profile, then go ahead and maybe consider re-engaging the autopilot or sequencing your flight plan to guide you down the missed approach. But we never initiate a missed approach with the autopilot unless it's maybe some brand new airplane that just came off the line that has some new feature that I've never seen. So really important. In that missed approach, we're flying away and now we're, you know, through 1500, 2000 feet. And I look out and the flaps are still out. And this is, again, a really common thing because we get task saturated in that missed approach. We're so focused on, you know, the aviating, navigating, communicating, making sure that we're not busting altitudes, all this stuff, that we kind of forget some of the basics sometimes. And part of aviating is aircraft configuration. So a great way to think about that is your missed approach is really no different than a takeoff. So I don't, whatever your SOP is in your airplane, you take off at 400 feet or at 1,000 feet, whatever it is. We set climb power, flaps up. So missed approach, we can standardize things a little bit and follow the same flow, the same course of action. Missed approach, autopilot disconnect, max power, positive rate, gear up, 400 feet flaps up. Meanwhile, we are still flying the airplane in the lateral and the vertical, complying with the missed approach track and instructions. The next thing was airspeed. So luckily we never got slow. I don't like being slow in airplanes, especially airplanes that have, you know, nice laminar wings. But every airplane has a prescribed climb speed, be it best rate, be it best angle. You know, there's an approach that, or sorry, a speed that is specified as, you know, your normal approach speed. VREF, there's all these published speeds for an airplane. So it's important that we know those speeds and we fly those speeds unless we have a reason to deviate from them. So what we saw in this case was the missed approach. We just basically started the climb, set a vertical speed mode in the autopilot because there's no airspeed mode in that autopilot. Picked an arbitrary number of like 500 feet per minute or 700 feet per minute. And we kind of settled out on, okay, well, whatever that speed gives me is good enough. That's how I'm going to fly the airplane. Okay. Not necessarily wrong, but here's the thing. If you are flying a missed approach, especially in the training environment, ATC kind of wants to get you up and out of the way. So, you know, what's your best rate of climb speed in this airplane? 90 knots, 93 knots in this case. In that case, set the vertical speed such that is going to give you that 93 or 95 knots. We found that we were climbing away at 140 knots in a piston-powered airplane, which really gave us next to no climb performance. So I asked that question. And go, oh, I just set it for this foot per minute or whatever it may be. So know your speeds and then intentionally and deliberately fly those speeds unless you have a reason to not fly them. I mean, once you're away from the ground, let's say, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 feet away from the ground and you've kind of completed those initial few steps of the missed approach, yeah, feel free to accelerate into more of an en route climb, whatever that may be for your airplane. But in the critical phases, the approach, the missed approach, final approach, stuff like that, try and fly prescribed speeds. And also keep in mind, at least in Canada, on the flight test and on a check ride, on final, your speed needs to be within, I believe it is 5 knots of the speed that you have specified in your briefing. I think it's +5 and -0 or something like that. The next thing, I wrote the word sterile. We're not talking about having kids or not having kids here. We're talking about distractions and talking inside conversations. So my general rule when I'm flying with clients is that the cockpit is sterile for the last 500 feet of any climb or descent. That means nothing else is happening except making sure that we capture that altitude, that we don't bust an altitude. I might make an exception for, you know, obviously responding to an ATC clearance or instruction. Maybe if we're running a checklist and we've fine-tuned things where we can run a checklist and also scan our instruments. But things like approach briefings, they don't happen within 500 feet of a target altitude. Copying down the ATIS, that doesn't happen within 500 feet of capturing a new altitude. Just general banter and talk in the cockpit or programming the flight plan in the GPS, again, does not happen within 500 feet of capturing an altitude. I want to hear that call out that is something, you know, 5,500 climbing 6,000, at which point everything gets shut down until I see that we are level at 6,000. At no point, and this happens so often and more often than I'd like to see, and this is one of the big things we work on, is at no point do I ever want to see the airplane level off at an altitude or make a large course change on the GPS or flight plan if the autopilot's on while the pilot's head is down looking at a chart, looking at a checklist, writing something down. We should always be aware as we are approaching a new altitude, as well as when we are approaching a waypoint or a fix on our route where there's going to be a course change, and we should be heads up verifying that that is happening as we expect it to be. Okay, so that's sterile or sterility in the cockpit in the last 500 feet. Scanning while briefing, again, really, really common thing that we see is we get so caught up in doing the perfect approach briefing and reading everything on the plate that we get sucked into this plate and our eyes are down on the plate reading every word. Whether or not we're understanding what we're reading is a whole nother kettle of fish, but when you're briefing an approach plate, make sure that you're going over a couple items, let's say 3-4 items, and then scan up and look at your instruments, and then look down and cover another 3 or 4 items on the plate, and then scan up and look at your instruments. Make sure that, you know, all your autopilot modes are still correct, that your power is set, that, you know, that you haven't leveled off and forgotten to increase power, for example, or that we're not in some turn we weren't expecting to. It's a constant scan up of instruments plate. Checklists. So again, checklists could be a whole nother episode, but all I'm going to say is anytime we change the aircraft configuration or phase of flight, there's a checklist that goes with it. So whether it's a taxi, run up, before takeoff, after takeoff, cruise, descent, after landing, whatever it is, there is checklists associated with certain phases of flight. And it is very easy to become comfortable in the airplane we're flying to skip them. I have been guilty in the past. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm perfect, but it is really, really important that we get those checklists down and make them part of our workflow. And especially when we're maybe leaving something like flaps down, or forgetting, you know, even certain lights that you have in your checklist for certain phases of flight. That's kind of the first indication of a breakdown of the flow, and checklists are there to save us from high workload situations where we might forget something small. I mean, I was flying one time with a client in a twin engine airplane, and we were doing our descent checklist, and he goes, I'm going to do the descent checklist. I said, that's a great idea. And I had not been watching the engine gauges super, super closely. And he got to the third item. It said engine gauges. And he looked at the engine gauges and said, oh, Ryan. Yeah. He goes, is the oil pressure supposed to be that low? And I go, nope. And we actually ended up shutting down the engine and returning to the airport single engine feathered because of the crazy low oil pressure that was observed. And I can honestly say that probably would not have been noticed unless the checklist had been run. So checklist use is a big one. Next one is going to be standardization. So this is the one thing that professional pilots, I'm doing my air quote thing again, be it airline, corporate, whatever it is, do. And they standardize everything. Every takeoff is done the same way. Every landing and approach is set up the same way. Every approach briefing is given in the same order. I mean, there's room to deviate from standard, but standard has to be our baseline. So if I go up with somebody by the time we're done, I want to be able to fly five back-to-back approaches and have the airplane configured and each action done at the same point every single time for five approaches in a row. Now you go, well, why would you get stuck in only doing it one way? Because when you're really comfortable doing it one way, it creates that muscle memory. It creates that automatic reaction ability. And it also gives us the ability to deviate from that intentionally, but at least it gives us a baseline to deviate from. So standardization is huge. The last thing on this flight in my notes is I wrote down with traffic. And so on two instances in this flight, we kind of had this thing where ATC passed us traffic and the response was such and such airplane with the traffic. And I'm thinking, well, do you have the traffic? No, I don't have the traffic. So why'd you say you were with the traffic? And the reply by the pilot to ATC with the traffic, he took that to mean when he said it as with the traffic information. Like I copy that there's traffic. The controller in me is just screaming inside because I'm like, oh, well, if I'm on the other side of the radio and I hear with traffic, I assume that you have the traffic in sight and I can discontinue separation and between, you know, the VFR traffic and yourself and you have them in sight. So this happened twice. On the second time, it was we were past traffic and he said with traffic and the controller had actually given us an altitude restriction because of that traffic. And when the pilot told the controller that he had the traffic or said with traffic, the altitude restriction was canceled. And he said, yeah, you can continue your descent now. And I said, well, where's the traffic? He goes, well, I don't see him. So again, really important to be crystal clear in all of your radio communication. If you are past traffic, there's really two answers. And one is I'm looking if you don't have the traffic. And the other one is traffic in sight or contact or with the traffic, but that you have the traffic in sight. If you do not have the traffic in sight, make sure you make it clear by saying negative contact or looking or we do not have the traffic in sight. Something like that so that both the controller and the pilot are on the same page. So again, those are some short notes from one flight. And everything I just said right now is something I would normally put into a written report after the flight. And I would email it to the client to give them something to chew on, to look at. And I find that by doing it that way, usually in our next session, which may be a week later or a couple weeks later, they will have reviewed the document and we can really move forward by implementing some lessons learned from the session prior. Because remember, we're not doing ab initio training. We're doing kind of more advanced operations, trying to just move our flying to that next level. And these notes and debriefing reports, if you will, are definitely a really good tool in that. The go along with debriefing reports, when we work with clients, it is an ongoing relationship. So today alone, I actually had two emails from clients that were planning trips. And again, when we get our instrument rating, it's in this very kind of tightly controlled environment. We really learn a lot of theory, but get to apply not a lot of it. So actually two or three, I forget now, emails today from people just wanting to run their decision-making process by myself, also by another coach, and say, hey, you know, I'm thinking of doing this tomorrow. What if this happens? What do I do? Or, you know, this happened today. My airplane's in maintenance, but I think I should be able to get out by 7 o'clock this evening, but the weather's looking like this. You know, I have another option. You know, what do you think? And we were able to hash out that together. And in one case, you know, we kind of arrived at, why don't you just spend the night and go tomorrow morning, go really early. It'll be nice and smooth. You know, no pressure, because everything you're telling me, it sounds like we're trying to, come up with reasons why we should be able to get it done tonight when there's already five or six things stacked against us, that are almost like really small pieces of Swiss cheese that could start lining up here. So let's just cut that right now and start again tomorrow. And that was one. And the other one was, you know, a trip that is happening tomorrow, just the what ifs, you know, what if this happens? What if there's coastal fog? How do I go about flying an approach for one runway? And if there's fog, but I see the other end is clear, but it's an uncontrolled airspace, how do I do that? What do I need to communicate? You know, how do I go about, you know, requesting a hold to wait out the weather and then analyze my fuel for alternate? All this stuff are questions that come up after the fact. And as part of our ongoing relationship with our clients, and we love the fact that they call and they talk this stuff out with us, because it means that they are learning. It means that they know what they don't know. And it also gives me great material to talk about here and share with you, because I'm not about just helping them. We want to help all of you to be the best you possibly can be. All right, that is enough of my ramblings for this evening. It is now 10 past 9, and I think I am going to call it a day. Before you go, just make sure you subscribe to this on the Apple, iTunes, or Spotify. Go to cardinalaviation.ca. Follow us on Instagram at Cardinal Aviation and let us know your thoughts, your questions. We love your feedback. Support the program if you are so inclined. We really appreciate it. And until next time, fly safely, never stop learning.